Hi everyone, good evening. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program broadcast. My name is Dr. Brad Reedy. Tonight I'm going to be talking about ADHD, and maybe more than ever I'm excited about this presentation because of some new initiative we have at Evoke Therapy Programs and what we brought in and the special person that we brought in to help with learning profiles and differences. So ironically, if you have a learning profile that's hard, it's hard for you to keep your attention, this might be a hard broadcast for you in the early slides, because I'm going to go over diagnostics and then I'm going to go over our response, our treatment, and what we're doing unique at Evoke. I wanted to start off with some statistics that I think begin to underscore the impact of educational and academic trauma. Before we brought on our cognitive scientist, Sanford Shapiro, I thought that learning differences were much less impactful than I've come to understand that they are, and that even those issues that don't reach a high level of impairment can still be frustrating, can still bring up or trigger shame in individuals. Even when we were doing one of our recent training around learning differences, I remembered back to an eighth grade classroom experience where I didn't know the answer to a question and the intense shame that I felt, and then I made a joke to distract the class and the teacher. And I don't have any diagnosable learning differences, but if something from the eighth grade, right, 40 years ago, can still be that impactful on me to this day, then it's powerful to imagine what it's like when you do have learning differences, process information differently. So tonight we're going to be talking about ADHD specifically, but there's going to be some application to learning styles, profiles, and differences in general. Girls with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder were 3.6 times more likely to meet the criteria for eating disorders. The presence of a learning disability among clinically depressed, hospitalized children was 7 times higher than the general population. 35% of children with learning disabilities drop out of high school. And then they give some numbers about the statistics. Approximately 6.1 million children have ADHD in this country. Boys are more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD than girls, 12.9% for boys compared to 5.6% for girls. This is probably the most profound thing that I found. And I actually saw it in an article before I decided to do this broadcast on ADHD. I took this from attitudemag.com. Dr. William Dodson estimated that children with ADHD receive a full 20,000 more negative messages in their lifetimes on average than the general population. 20,000 negative messages. So we start to get a grasp of what it's like for somebody that has that when we look at these statistics. The trauma, and that's what it is, it's trauma. The shame, the symptoms that arise for it are profound and prolific. Generally speaking, people with ADHD show a persistent pattern of inattention and or hyperactivity, impulsivity, that interferes with the function of development. So again, I'm going to go through some of the diagnostic categories and criteria before I talk about our response and some of the take-home messages for all of us. There are 3 types, 2 specific individual types, and then a combined type that I'll describe. First of all, there's the inattentive type. And with the inattentive type, you need 6 or more of the following symptoms for children up to the age of 16 years, or 5 or more for adolescents age 17 years and older, and adults. Symptoms of inattention have been present for at least 6 months, and they are inappropriate for the developmental level. So here are the criteria to choose from. Often fails to give close attention to details, or makes careless mistakes in schoolwork, at work, or with other activities. Often has trouble holding attention on tasks or play activities. Often does not seem to listen when spoken to directly. Often does not follow through on instructions and fails to finish schoolwork, chores, or duties in the workplace. Often has trouble organizing tasks and activities. often avoids, dislikes, or is reluctant to do tasks that require mental effort over a long period of time, such as schoolwork or homework. Often loses things necessary for tasks and activities. Is easily distracted, is often forgetful in daily activities. So again, some of these are going to sound like maybe a typical child, but these are in comparison to the general population. And one of the things I'm going to talk about tonight is the idea that educational testing can ferret this out. This is important because I think in wilderness therapy, I think we're exceptional at diagnoses. I really do. I think with the immersion into the small group setting, with the kind of staff observation we have with 8-day shifts and everything that gets exposed in the microcosm that is a wilderness therapy group, I think we're exceptional at natural observation and diagnostics. However, sometimes the learning profiles are not so apparent, and sometimes they're masked by the client or student because of the shame. And lastly, a wilderness environment actually lends itself well to people with ADHD and other learning differences. It's not a sit in one spot and stare at a teacher and listen to a lecture and reading and writing as much as it is in an academic setting. One of my very favorite stories about accommodations is from one of our therapists at Evoke. And his mother was a teacher, his father was a teacher. At least 2 or maybe even 3 of the family members in the immediate family had ADHD. And because mom knew about this and was a bulldog, what she did was she made sure that teachers accommodated her son. For example, he was allowed to stand up in the back of the class and pace, which is what he does to this day when he's doing his work. She made sure that he had time each morning to exercise. And on long family trips, the dad also happened to be a track coach, a state champion, multi-year state champion track coach. The boys would get out of the car and they would run in the morning on long trips along the frontage road with the car. So mom and dad saw the needs that were unique to their children with ADHD and met them and even advocated for them in the classroom. And this therapist, my friend, my colleague to this day says he doesn't know that he would have made it out of high school, definitely not through college, without the support of his mother. And he says it with tears in his eyes because it was not an easy thing for her to do. So I just wanted to insert that there because I think it illustrates how the importance of sensitivity to each child's differences. Now let's talk about hyperactivity and impulsivity as a separate category of ADHD. Again, 6 or more symptoms for children up to the age of 16, or 5 or more for adolescents age 17 or older, and that includes adults. Must be present for 6 months and must be disruptive and inappropriate for the person's developmental level. So here are the criteria where the 6 or 5 must be chosen from. Often fidgets with or taps hands or feet or squirms in seats. Often leaves seat in situations when remaining in the seat is expected. Often runs about or climbs in situations where it is not appropriate. Adolescents or adults may be limited to feeling restless. Often unable to play or take part in leisure activities quietly. Often on the go, acting as if driven by a motor. Talks excessively. Blurts out an answer before the question has been completed. Has trouble waiting their turn. And lastly, often interrupts or intrudes on others. Butts into conversations or games. So we talked about the inattentive type. Now this is the hyperactive or impulsive type. And then you can have a combined type. And for the combined type, several inattentive or hyperactive impulsive symptoms were present before the age of 12. Several symptoms are present in 2 or more settings. There's clear evidence that symptoms interfere with or reduce the quality of social, school, or work functioning. That's the criteria for all mental health diagnoses. You might find it humorous, and most people find it interesting, that when you're studying psychology and diagnoses in school, that you begin identifying with every single category and diagnosis. That's a very common thing to do. Similar, I've heard stories about that with medical students. Right? You begin to identify with the descriptions of diagnoses. But the difference is that it becomes an impairment in one of the important spheres of life, of functioning. Social, academic, work and job. So that's the big threshold that moves it from having traits to having it reach a clinical diagnosable level. Lastly, the symptoms are not better explained by another medical condition or disorder, such as mood disorder, anxiety disorder, dissociative disorder, or personality disorder. The symptoms do not happen only during the course of schizophrenia or another psychotic disorder. So we have three categories of ADHD: the combined presentation, if there are enough symptoms of both; predominantly inattentive type, if enough symptoms of inattention exist; and then the predominantly hyperactive or impulsive presentation. And because symptoms can change over time, I found this interesting as studying for this today, because symptoms can change over time, the presentation may change as well over time. I'll tell you something fascinating. I know a lot of colleagues who have achieved academic success who found themselves, who identified later in life as adults as having ADHD and now take medication for it and makes a big difference in their life. It also, I've heard from them, makes them sensitive to those kinds of possibilities in their children, which I think is a great gift for the child. I wanted to talk for just a moment, because this is one of the questions about executive functioning also, because we talk about limits or impairment in executive functioning. And is that ADHD? Is it the same thing? So I wanted to distinguish and draw the line between the two. ADHD is a brain-based condition that makes it hard for kids to concentrate, use working memory, organize and manage themselves. They also may be impulsive or hyperactive. These are also all issues with executive functioning. So in other words, people with ADHD have executive functioning issues, but not all executive functioning issues are ADHD. Executive functioning issues are weaknesses in key mental skills that are responsible for attention, memory, organization, and time management, and flexible thinking. Kids with ADHD struggle with these skills, but so do some kids who have learning differences other than ADHD. So that's one difference. Now I get to talk about the exciting thing that we're doing that I don't know that anybody has done. A very dear friend and colleague of mine, Sanford Shapiro, approached us several months ago with this idea. He already had a love for Evoke Therapy programs, and he wanted to bring his passion for the cognitive sciences to our program, wanted to augment and add his knowledge so that it could even be better. He's semi-retired, so he was in a position to make us an offer that we couldn't refuse. So Sanford came on board, and as a part of that, he's helping us not only to immediately increase our sensitivity to those with learning differences and learning profiles that are atypical, but also to rewrite our entire curriculum formally, so staff and therapists just don't have to make the decision on the fly to adjust the vehicles for the assignments. So I'm going to say a little bit about Sanford from his bio. He's a learning disabilities specialist who is highly sought after as a trainer and speaker, noted for his ability to bridge the gap between therapy and cognitive science. I have found such a synergy with him, because as we're talking about his approach to teaching, the overlap between the way that he thinks and goes about treating people with learning differences is so much the way that we talk about, and I teach our therapists to think about the clinical presentation and intervention. And most importantly, that there's no generic solution, and that each person should be considered individually. And that it really takes, first of all, a foundation of an awareness of your own learning profile as a starting point to be able to see other people. So one of the things that he introduced to the staff at Evoke from the beginning was us looking at studying our own learning profiles. That is an important aspect, he believes, as a starting point. He's written a child's book. One of the things that he told me that was fascinating, that really piqued my interest when he was first presenting the idea of coming on board as a special consultant. The idea was, he said, he learned early on in his career in working with specifically children, young people with dyslexia, that techniques that help people with dyslexia to read more efficiently and with greater capability and attention and retention, he learned that those same techniques apply to all readers. And there's so much of a discussion in our field these days on finding a more and more specific niche to reach more people. But Sanford said that there is a science in learning and cognitive science that actually suggests that we cast a wider net. And I love that because it goes right in line with attachment theory, which is at the foundation of the Evoke Therapy Program model. And this theory, this idea, this concept is called UDL, Universal Design for Learning. And it's now something that all of our Evoke staff are trained in, all the therapists are trained in, and now is making its way through a complete overhaul of the curriculum. It's immediately in place at the therapist and the staff's disposal, but it's being formally implemented as we redesign the entire curriculum to include options, various vehicles to teach the same thing. And Sanford is very clear to remind us that remember what you're trying to teach and to separate that out from the vehicle. So using a recorder, using pictures, and drawing and art, using an oral presentation to the group, creating an outline instead of a detailed narrative, using sculpture or other symbols to communicate oneself could be effective. Presenting information in picture or art form can be helpful. So this is from our website. By incorporating Universal Design for Learning, UDL, we more effectively reach the broadest number of clients and address their underlying issues. According to the Center for Excellence in Universal Design, UDL is, quote, the design and composition of an environment so that it can be accessed, understood, and used to the greatest extent possible by all people, regardless of their differences or abilities. And here's where it just makes common sense. An example of UDL in product design is a ramped entrance to a building. While it might be designed for someone in a wheelchair, it also works well for someone pushing a stroller, the elderly, or someone on crutches. Learning to align therapeutic communication with an eye towards different types of learning strengths and weaknesses helps all of us reach more students and their families. So that's what we have begun as a collaboration and an initiative at Evoke. We want to offer, like I said, greater flexibility in the vehicle for the assignments and principles that we're trying to teach. Rewriting the curriculum. We're in the middle of that right now. All of our staff are expected to take tests to understand their learning profiles. And I found, even in the first training with Sanford, that understanding my profile, I look back and regrettably consider the probability that I was unkind or inflicted trauma on students who had a different learning style than I did. Even though intellectually I knew about learning differences and learning styles, I knew that. I saw some blind spots because of my style and the way that other people might have presented themselves and responded to assignments and therapeutic activities. It's going to be an ongoing training initiative at our program. Sanford is going to present to staff and therapists over and over again. He and I are presenting at a conference on this in January, also to the field. We have, I think, an increased sensitivity to academic and educational trauma, and there is a link, a comorbidity between traumatic disorders and ADHD and other learning differences. And an important thing is to de-shame learning disabilities. Sanford shared with us examples from popular culture that many of you might be familiar with, of people in history that have accomplished incredible things, although they suffered from ADHD. And I say suffered, and I think that's mostly because the environment was set up for round pegs, if you will. And they were a square peg. And so the round holes of the environment didn't fit. Create a UDL culture, a universal design culture, not just academically and educationally, which we are, but also therapeutically. Well, how can we reach a broader population of parents and children? And to encourage more and more assessments and have that inform our recommendations going forward. Because, like I said in the beginning, I've seen this in my career vividly. Children with moderate ADHD oftentimes don't struggle as much in a wilderness therapy program as they do in a classroom. In other words, the environment, the context of outdoor experiential therapy is a broader net. Doesn't require such narrow responses from people who might have various atypical learning styles or profiles. So the take home, it's specific to ADHD, of course, but the take home is that it's commonplace and that the trauma is significant. I talk, and you all know this, I talk extensively about the impact of a parent in the family system on a child. I talk about that all the time, principally because that's the thing over which we have the most control. But we need to add this to the equation, that school or academic trauma are an important part of it. And it requires us as parents to be more sensitive and aware and educated and to advocate more for our children. Educational testing, if there's any doubt, right? We can look at school problems as an indicator for psychological, emotional, mental health addiction issues, for sure. But we can also consider the fact that those school problems could also be the source. There's a high correlation between substance abuse, oppositional defiant disorder, and ADHD and other learning profiles, other learning differences. Consider the implications for universal design. Ask for, look for, talk to schools and programs about accommodations. Talk about academic and educational trauma with your child. If you can come up with some of your own, something profound happened in our training. Several of our staff shared in a very raw and honest way their own educational and academic trauma. That came out from the discussion. Shame. Shame is universal. Like I said in the early part of this broadcast, if I still remember vividly, I still remember I could walk back into the classroom where I was sitting with the teacher and where he was standing with the one time in eighth grade when I was asked a question and I was paying no attention to the lecture. And if that's so vivid, think about somebody where that happens dozens of times every day. Understanding the root of the acting out behavior. We believe in that in general, but just putting a greater emphasis on academic, educational differences and trauma. Be mindful about choosing programs, schools committed to sensitivity to learning profiles and disabilities. Like I said, wilderness is a wonderful intervention, fantastic intervention. Gives these kinds of kids confidence and a time where they can feel safe. A time that fits their learning difference more than the sterile, traditional academic classroom. But we need to make sure that there's an assessment and an awareness coming out of wilderness about what needs to happen next. And then for some of you, this may be true, to consider your own potential ADHD or learning profile. Even if you've had, the people that I'm talking about are successful in business, have masters and PhDs, have stable family relationships, don't suffer from substance abuse disorder or diagnosable clinical levels of depression and anxiety, but it was a challenge and it was always a fight and there was an underlying moderate level of anxiety constantly in their life and an anxiety about fitting in and responding to people. So consider the possibility of looking into it yourself. I'll go through some of the upcoming events and then we'll get to live questions. We ask all parents that possibly can to come to our parent support groups. I'll be in Chicago October 27th. That's this Monday. New York on November 4th. And in the Los Angeles South Bay area, December 1st. RSVP or inquire by emailing melanie@evoketherapy.com. We just added another intensive, finding you if you want to do a deep dive into your own work. I can't think of something you can do better for yourself or for your family than attending one of our Finding Yous. I do it every year for myself and all of my family, and we support all of our managers and therapists to do this work too. The next one that we just opened up that has a space in it is December 11th through 15th. And then we have the 2020 dates in January, January 8th, February 19th. You can go to our website or email intensives@evoketherapy.com. If you're curious about some of the work there, listen to or watch the broadcast that I just did on Monday on inner child and how that relates to parenting and relationship issues. Our pursuits trips are customizable trips from a few days to 30 days. Think adventure therapy, sober fun. Think a recalibration or a reconnection to your therapeutic work. Young adults, adolescents, or families, or even couples. We ask all current parents to go to 6 12-step support groups. Any combination of Al-Anon, CODA, or Families Anonymous, you can go to their websites to find meetings in your area. I want to put a special plug in for adultchildren.org also. These are for people that grew up in alcoholic or dysfunctional families. And my measure of dysfunctional is a lot more sensitive than most people's. It's just growing up in a family of humans. What were the messages, the rules, the things that we weren't allowed to feel or say or be? Alateen is for teens. RefugeRecovery.org. You can go there to find out about meetings, support group. A Buddhist-inspired recovery program, less emphasis on a higher power if that's one of the obstacles for you. At NAMI.org, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, you can go there to find classes, resources that are free in your local area at the local chapter. All of these broadcasts are available on your favorite podcast app. On an iPhone or an iOS device, use the podcast app. On an Android device, you can use the SoundCloud app. On your computer, you can go to soundcloud.com. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find Evoke Therapy programs using the handle @EvokeTherapy. You can find the Summit Lodge, our intensive programs, on Instagram using @EvokeSummitLodge as the handle. You can find Evoke on Facebook by searching Evoke Therapy Programs. We need more Alumni Foundation members, board members. So please go to the Facebook page if you're interested in giving back and helping people, helping raise money and awareness for people who can't afford therapy. Go to the Facebook page and search Evoke Family Foundation. They're desperately in need of new board members. If you have expertise in fundraising, in legal areas, or if you just want to get back and you have energy for that, please go there. The Evoke Therapy blog has new content and information up each week. My book, The Journey of the Heroic Parent, is available on Amazon. Also, Audible or audio versions are available there. All right. I'm happy to take any live questions that might come in, if anybody has any. Somebody writes, I believe that my child will do well, quote unquote, in wilderness therapy, but will he be able to ever function in a normal high school or college classroom? It's a fair question. I mean, that's one of the questions to be asking your wilderness therapist. If he hasn't had recent psychoeducational testing, get it done if you possibly can. And have that be a part of his entrance into the next phase of his academic career, high school or college. High schools are required to make accommodations. Colleges are required to make accommodations if they're paid for with federal funds, or excuse me, with state funds in most states. So time tests, other accommodations are very, very common in a lot of academic settings. So it takes some work, like a lot of things. Even on the medical side of things, you have to be a squeaky wheel. You have to be an advocate. So get academic testing if you don't have any recent, and then have that be a part of the next stage of your placement, of where your child goes next. Thank you for asking that. That's kind of the, if nothing else, that's the take home I would have for all of you this evening. And lastly, I'll just say, I have empathy, right? Hopefully, the empathy gets increased as we become more aware of it. Because to be honest with you, I was always kind of thinking that it was always an effort thing when I was younger, before I became more and more aware of this and even more sensitive to it today. And having a sensitivity and a flexibility, you got to get rid of some ego. If you're worried that you're going to be duped by your child, you kind of have to get rid of that. That's where formal testing can help and diagnoses can help. So being sensitive, being aware, being flexible, knowing your own learning style are all great places to start. All right. The next broadcast will be next Wednesday, October 30th. We'll have the topic out for you tomorrow. I look forward to that. I'll be in, for those of you in the Chicago area, look forward to seeing you Sunday afternoon in Northbrook, Illinois. Hope to see you out there. Take care. Thanks for joining me this evening. For and on behalf of your children, thank you for being willing to do this work. Take care, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. No time.